name is Larissa Kennedy, my pronouns are she, her, and I have the joy and privilege of being national president at AUS. Warm welcome to episode 9 of the Anti-Racism in Action live stream. And in terms of what anti-racism in action means to me, I think it means decolonial, transformational action that is truly ready to reckon with the ways that racism is sewn into the fabric of our education system.
Good morning. Welcome to the grand finale, episode 9 of Anti-Racism in Action. Today's episode is titled Leadership and the Leader's Voice. Got a really, really cool show today. My co-anchor today is Stella. Stella, I wonder if you could join us in the studio. Hey, Stella, how are you?
I'm great, Gavin. How are you?
Yeah, really, really good. I think it was really interesting that we're episode 9. We've covered so many different elements today, but I think today's a really interesting one around leadership, but also the leader's voice, I think is really, really interesting. Two really cool guests that we've got today. Should we bring them in and then we can sort of, you know, go from there. It's great we've had Larissa and we've got a really cool sort of video coming up, and then I think everyone will see what we're trying to do with leadership and voice. But Robin, I wonder if you could come and join us. Robin Lamon from Black FE Leadership Group, and also we've got Nazir. Nazir, I wonder if you could come and join us as well. Nazir is really interesting. Is also, I mean, talk about exciting days today. I think we might have topped it a bit, but straight after this, Nazir is going to be interviewed by the Archbishop of Canterbury, as you do, on a Monday morning. So obviously he's got a tall order to sort of pass after us. But I think it's very interesting what we're sort of doing today. But Stella, we was having a chat in the green room around maybe highlighting a bit of what the whole show sort of meant to us, the whole series. I didn't know if you wanted to sort of take it away of what this whole season has meant to everyone, really.
Right. It's been about anti-racism in action, and we've had so many people introducing the live stream. And today it's the turn of all of us on the broadcast. Mm. Anti-racism in action. What does this mean to you, and how has it affected your leadership journey and what you do? If we could start with you, Nazir, and then Robin.
Good morning, everybody. I've been fighting against racism as long as everybody on this call. We've been doing it for decades and decades, and it's exhausting, isn't it? It's absolutely exhausting, constantly having to demonstrate what is racism to people who should know it already. Anti-racism, I think, differs from some of the other concepts because it's all action-based, as the title of this talk demonstrates. It's about identifying what racism is, eliminating it individually, institutionally, structurally. It's not enough, as a lot of people think, to say I'm not racist, which a lot of people do say, because actually that means, or that suggests, right, it's not my problem, but actually it is your problem. When you've got racism that surrounds you and everything that you do and everywhere that you go, and, you know, I've experienced, and I'm sure others have too, you can't simply say, well, I'm not racist, it's not my problem. And I hope that these talks that you've been doing and the work that will flow from this will be about demonstrating the change and showing people that you are changing as an institution. And why is it important? Because a seismic number of people in this country are just not engaged. They're not being allowed to achieve their potential. They're not being allowed to take up opportunities. They're being denied by processes, by systems, often by individuals too. And I think the whole country suffers as a result of that. It's not just about the individual suffering.
Yeah. 100% with you.
Agree totally. Robin, your turn.
Okay, well, Stella, I think those people who know me know that my family history means that I've been steeped in anti-racism from childhood. My parents were involved in the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. They had to leave that country because of their political activity. And as a young person, as a young boy growing up in that environment, you couldn't help but take on board what was around you and glaring evidence of that. As an adult, I've had similar experiences to all of us. You, Stella, you, Nazir, in the climb up the greasy pole, you know, that when you couldn't help but have have to deal with racism in your work life and in your private life. So it's something that really I have no choice but to engage with. And I think most people are in leadership positions in a country like ours, which has now got diversity, ethnic diversity baked into the population. It's no longer a minority of small proportions. It's something which will be a realistic issue for all of us to deal with in the coming generations. So I think it's important for leaders to understand what racism is, to understand that anti-racism means taking action, and to understand what their role as leaders is in making sure that we have a prosperous and inclusive society.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. Share all of that with you. And now it's your turn, Gavin. Why do you do what you do? Why are you supporting this live stream?
To be first, it's the right thing to do. I mean, I've been doing FE News for 18 years now, and you know, there's been a lot of talk and there's been a lot of, you know, sort of goodwill to try and to do action, but I've just seen it just go circle and circle and circle again. No more, you know, we need to have action, we need to be able to, you know, move forward is sort of number one. And I've, you know, I can't do it on my own. Everyone said that it's a collective, and we've got a platform where we've got a lot of people across the sector that can work together, and we can suggest solutions to people. We can make sure that we can make this happen. So that was the reason why number one, yeah, we run a job board, which is the biggest in the sector as well. You know, it's a whole thing around recruitment about, you know, trying to drive things forward. But also on a personal front, like you, Robin, I've got family history in trying to fight racism. I remember my granddad telling me about the Battle of Cable Street and around lifting up, you know, curbstones and putting down barriers to stop people marching through places with, you know, to make people feel uncomfortable, you know, and just to, you know, looking around, you know, racism in general. And it sort of, you know, on the other side, my nan, when she come from, you know, Kilkenny and Tipperary, having the signs up saying, no blacks, no Jews, no Irish, you know, sure. and experiencing that, what that meant being a vulnerable lady, just got off a boat, literally, you know. And it's just like, it's wrong, you know, and we should all together work together to be able to make sure that this isn't repeated again. If this happens from, you know, my you know, grandkids and stuff, we're still having this conversation, that's wrong. So yeah, Let's just draw a line under it and let's just move forward, and everyone could just be everyone. People could just be who they can be. It don't matter, you know, who you are, where you come from. Everyone should be able to drive forward. So that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah. Thank you, Gavin, for sharing your thoughts. For me personally, anti-racism in action is living out my faith and my belief that we are all created in God's image, and therefore any prejudice, any discrimination, any actions on the basis of so-called race or skin colour is totally, or any perceptions of superiority must be challenged and fought. It's totally wrong. And therefore, my leadership journey has been inculcated by my faith and the clear injunction to act justly and to love mercy and to walk my own path, my work, my life, my everything I do. To walk that path carefully. So it's, for me, it's been about just leadership. Just leadership has been critically important to me. And you will all know that I was the first ethnic minoritized female CEO of an incorporated college in the United Kingdom. And therefore, for me, there was no place to hide, and I didn't want to hide. I had to stand up and be counted, even when my face didn't fit. I was called upon to chair the Black Leadership Initiative, which was about, you know, encouraging that pipeline to leadership, and that was one of the best things I have done in my life, bringing Black colleagues and white colleagues together collaboratively to create a mentor and coach Black leaders. And I've been volunteered into the Black FE leadership group, and I don't have a choice really, because this work is critically important, and having that voice to call out racism, to speak up, to be who I am, and do what I believe, working collaboratively with so many people, it's critically important. Just leadership, justice.
Mm. Just thinking, Stella, how many times have we been called role models? The only reason we're role models is there are so few of us in these roles. We shouldn't have to carry the burden of every British Pakistani or British African Caribbean we always carry these burdens. And I think, as I said recently on Question Time, I said, our failures are magnified. We make a mistake and it'll be, all over the place. Our opportunities will be affected. We may not get another job, et cetera, et cetera. Our successes are never recognized. And so all that you've achieved, Stella, all that you've achieved, Robin, is often just goes under the radar. It's just her. Rather than what it clearly does, it's about you being a pioneer and setting the way for the journey for everybody else. And Gavin, I've tried to do that too. And, one of the things you've talked about, leadership comes at a personal cost. I can't begin to tell you the amount of abuse I've received. I had far right people, you will know some of them, outside of my house protesting about some of my decisions. Look, I've got no problem with people criticizing my decision making, people criticizing the things I say or the things I do, but I object deeply to them criticizing me for who I am and where I come from, where my family come from. And it always comes to that. They move quickly from, I don't like what he did, to what that P person did, or that Muslim over there. They quickly move to my identity rather than the decisions and choices that I've made, which, you wouldn't do for anybody else, or certainly not a person that isn't a person of color.
Yeah, it is quite that attack on your person and your identity is just totally wrong, and we must speak up and stop this. Over to you, Gavin.
Yeah, no, thank you, Sarah. Thanks, everyone, for being honest about your personal journey, because this is tough stuff. That people have been through and sort of stepping out and being brave. From saying what's happened to your home, Nazir, to Stella, around sharing faith and why it's important to you for your personal journey and leadership journey. I've been desperate to show this video for. I mean, so like I nearly punched the air when I got this. We've had the leader of all of the students and learners in the UK do the opening address, but we've got a little video with Nadine. He couldn't join us in person, but I caught up with him the other day and asked him what anti-racism in action meant to him. He did a really interesting address around how he's literally on a boat come from Iraq, where he was going to be forced into doing all sorts of stuff, and he comes to the country with literally nothing and he's now the education secretary. Really inspiring story, but I wonder if you could just check out this quick video with Nazim. What's going to play it right now.
It's really important that we engage in this. And it can be uncomfortable. Can be uncomfortable for us as politicians, or even the civil service. And I know that the previous PermSec, the Department of Education, really did a lot of good work that the current PermSec is also continuing to build on for the civil service to be much more representative and diverse. Equally in our colleges, it is challenging when only 9% of our principals and college leaders are from Black or ethnic minority backgrounds, and I want to make sure I work with the sector to make sure that those paths to leadership are as seamless and are frictionless for people from the Black or Afro-Caribbean community or the Asian community or any other community. There should be no barriers put in place. In fact, there should be the support, and I commend you for all the work that you are doing as an organisation and really sort of leading the agenda on this.
So, Stella, I didn't know if you wanted to sort of respond to both, Larissa from, the student voice and leader of the voices of all those people for the future, but also Nadine, who's literally leading the whole of the education sort of sector and driving things forward. I didn't know if you wanted to put your feet to them, really.
Yeah. Robin, if you could go first and then Nadine.
Well, it's great to hear that level of unequivocal support from the Education Secretary. What I'd like to do is to repeat the challenge that we made to his predecessor, to him. We'd like the Secretary of State to take the lead in this, to take decisive action on two key areas. One is to level up student outcomes for Black students across all phases of education. There is a worrying and sustained attainment gap for young Black students. No matter how able they are, they don't seem to be able to break through that. And as he himself acknowledged, we need to have a more representative workforce. It can't be right in the FE and school sector, 30% plus of pupils and students come from Black communities, and yet we can't get beyond even 10% in the workforce. So those are two areas we would love to see the Education Secretary take a firm lead on.
And for my part, absolutely everything that Robin said, but I'm a firm believer that talk is cheap. It's action and words that are really important. And I've no doubt that the minister is good-hearted and believes entirely in everything he says. But you also have a government that created that hostile environment not so long ago that treated the Windrush survivors, in effect, as poorly as they did, that recently has been saying that the fish in the channel belong to us, but the migrants trying to cross it don't. So you've got a government with mixed messaging. What I want them to do is everything that Robin said. And when I became chair of Hopwood Hall, that was my first taste of FE land 3 years ago. And I was blown away, as Robin has indicated, by how white as snow senior leadership teams were or are. How white as snow the AOC was, how all the institutions and bodies were, and yet, as Robin has quite rightly pointed out, the demography, the profile of our learners is even more pronounced than you could possibly imagine. And so what's happened to get us there? And that goes back to the point we made earlier on, Gavin, about institutional and structural racism. It's not enough, for example, when you're appointing a CEO to ensure that you have one minority on the shortlist. Because I know from experience, actually all that does is protect the institution when they end up selecting the white person. So we've got to recognize that it's not just about words, it's about actually doing something, but also doing something across government in terms of the messaging you deliver.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Nazir, can I ask you, you've got a really interesting book that was out 2020, The Prosecutor, One Man's Pursuit of Justice for the Voiceless. You've got a new book coming as well, Race to the Top, Structural Racism and How to Fight It. But could you explain, how do you give a voice to the voiceless? How do we as a collective give a voice to the voiceless?
Well, obviously my experience was in crime and justice for 25 years or so. And I picked up on the fact that we were picking the low-lying fruit. We were always prosecuting the cases that were relatively straightforward. And the people who were suffering in silence, and they often are victims of hate crime, victim of abuse, that kind of thing, they didn't have any confidence in the authorities. Why would they? If you're 9 times more likely to be stopped and searched, if you're more likely to be arrested, charged, convicted, if you're Black, on the same evidence as a white person, you don't have confidence in coming forward. And so one of the skills of a leader, given we're talking about leadership, that is undervalued, Gavin, is listening. I listen. I told NGOs up and down the country, just tell me what's going on. And they shared with me their concerns. They shared with me their journeys. They shared with me the obstacles that they were facing in terms of being able to get justice. And so then my job, using whatever influence and levers I had, was to bring some change and do that. And to, if we need to change the law, we change the law. If we need to change guidelines, we change the guidelines. But ultimately, it was about delivering justice for people who had next to zero confidence in the system. And the only way, as I said, you can do that, Gavin, is by listening to them. So similarly with our, with the educational sector, you know, you've got to listen to learners, you've got to listen to the staff who day in, day out, it's not enough for the strategic leaders and the, you know, the main funders, et cetera, to think they know the answers, because they don't. The people who do know the answers are the people who are living it 24/7.
Yep.
And my new book, or my next book, Race to the Top, is it even more pressing? Because, you know, HarperCollins have asked me, and I've been interviewing and receiving comments, et cetera, from leaders across society, not just education, health, politics, media, culture, religion, you name it, and trying to understand what obstacles BME leaders have faced and are continuing to face when it comes to racism. And the idea then is not just to, you know, tell you what's wrong, but also see what can be put right. And so, you know, Stella and others have given me their insights in order about to not just simply tinker, which we always do. Here's a new bit of legislation, a new guidelines. Is to what do we need to transform the world for minoritized people in this country and beyond? And I think, you know, Britain has a good story to tell. We've come a long way from, you know, when I was growing up in the Midlands and Enoch Powell was telling me that rivers of blood will flow. We've come a long way from that. But if you talk to people right now in many, many communities, they don't necessarily know what happened 40 years ago. What they'll tell you is what's happening 40 minutes ago. And 40 minutes ago, they were being racially abused. They were being racially discriminated against. And so we've got a challenge that we simply can't put this in a, and say it's done. It's done. We know it's not done. And we also know what needs to be done. And that is, again, going back to my point, listening to the people who are most impacted by it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Robin, Stella, what would you like to share around leaders' voice and giving a voice to the voiceless? How can we as leaders be able to give a voice to the voiceless? Any thoughts at all, Robin or Stella?
Well, I was taken with what Larissa said, and my response to what she said is that in terms of giving a voice to the voiceless, it's important for organisations like hers and ours, the Black FE Leadership Group, to collaborate, to work together to make the impact of what we say even greater. So for me, it's actually it's a challenge as well as an offer which we've made to the NUS to work on our shared objectives, and that includes decolonizing the curriculum, but it also means taking some really serious action to change the landscape of both higher education, further education, and of course schools.
No, definitely. Stella, any thoughts on how to give a voice to the voiceless?
Giving a voice to the voiceless is all about, you know, first of all, listening. People in leadership right across the system, right, do actually listen to what people are saying or not saying, what's hidden, what can't be talked about, which people do know, and then taking action to tackle these issues once and for all. There's no point listening to stories and narratives and saying, you know, this is how awful this is. It's all terrible. And ringing, time for ringing of hands over. So listen and act.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I think it's the common theme. So we were by design two ears, one mouth, aren't we? And it's interesting that that both of you said that, actually. And I think as from my side, what I can see, we've got like 5,900 newsrooms, on FE News. It's important for leaders to use their voice to be able to do in impactful change and to be brave, pull down the parapets, and to be vulnerable and to be, able to come together. I think that's really interesting.
I think it's important also, Gavin, that the issue of personal risk is highlighted, as Nazir did mention. That's part of giving the voice to the voiceless, that there are people who cannot speak for fear.
Yep.
For fear of the hostile environment, for fear of personal attack, for fear of losing their job, for what might happen to their families, for and therefore for those of us and anyone who is brave and has a platform, that we actually gather those fears, the sum of these fears, and speak out boldly, because there are people who really, really cannot. It's yeah. It's palpable. You can touch the fear, and we know that people are really, really scared.
Can I just add one thing, Gavin and Stella?
Sure.
The issue of where we're at. We are 11 years after the Equality Act was passed, and in my view, the Equality Act has been something of a comfort blanket for institutions. You know, they've produced EDI policies and procedures, and they can point to glossy brochures and so on, but actually they're not taking action. All they're doing is doing the procedure, and in many respects that's not enough. I would like to see leaders, especially white leaders, informing themselves about the difference between structural or systemic racism and personal racism. That's a really important differential, because you don't, as Nazir said earlier, not being racist isn't enough. If you're a leader, you have to make sure there are no hidden jeopardies for your white and black learners and staff in the system. And quite clearly, the system has got hidden jeopardies. So it's up to people to inform themselves, to educate themselves, and to understand, as Nazir said, not being racist is no longer sufficient.
Gavin, one of the things I picked up on is that during my research is that a lot of institutions, I'm not just talking about education institutions, have decided, have found out that they don't have enough black people in leadership positions, but they have some Asian people or South Asian. And so what they've done is, rather than increasing the pool, the general number, they've started replacing, when a South Asian person moves on or retires, with a black person. And so we're still fighting over the same number, small number of roles. But worse than that, we now have a divide and rule thing going on, where black and South Asian people seem to be competing for the one position. So Robin's absolutely right. It's not enough to have, I mean, I'm tired of reading all these EDI policies that come out from organizations that end up in a lovely filing cabinet somewhere. And they all feel so glossy, and they all feel so good having done one. But then you look at the institution and you see how far they still have to go. And as Robin and Stella have both said, leaders have the responsibility. They inspire, they motivate, they deliver, they develop, they build relationships, they achieve, and they have to take responsibility for this, regardless of what they may think of that themselves. We know the structures and institutions remain absolutely racist.
Thank you. Thanks, Nazir. I know that we're nearly out of time, and Robin has got a big announcement to make.
Thank you, Stella. Yes, it's a save the date announcement. Last year we had a very successful conference, the first one, obviously. But this year we've raised the bar of performance to ourselves and to the sector. So on Wednesday the 16th of March, 2022, we're having an annual conference titled "Challenging the Black Paradox: A Cross Sector Four Nations Event." And I really recommend that everyone attends that.
Thank you. Well, it's been a great, great show. Thank you, Nazir. We've lost Nazir, but here we are.
I think he had about a minute to go until he's got to meet the Archbishop of Canterbury. I think
he has got to meet.
Nazir, you've got to go.
He just rang me. So I told him to call me back in 3 minutes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Nazir. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Gavin. Gavin, is there anything else you would like to to say to close? We've got season two coming, and would you like to do the honours and do the closing credits?
Yeah. No, everyone, thank you so much for joining us today, Nazir. Thank you for bouncing the Archbishop of Canterbury for another couple of minutes. I appreciate that, and thanks for everything you shared as well around everyone's personal journey, and that you know there is high stakes here. It is, you know, personal journeys around everything that's gone forward, but we need to make positive action. We need to make change. The word time for words have gone. And I think it's interesting around leaders, a leadership voice, that voice means action, not just talking. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today in the audience. Thank you, Stella, for arranging such an amazing season with, you know, the amount of effort you've put in has been absolutely off the chart. And thank you so much for arranging everything, getting everything all together. And this is totally co-produced, everyone, between the Black FE Leadership Group and FE News. But Stella has been absolutely key in being able to bring this all together, shape the direction, and just being a really, really awesome partner. So thank you for doing that, Stella. It's been really good to be working with you and all of the Black FE Leadership team. Also, Team FE News, Leah, thanks for getting this episode together and all of them. Thank you, Kelly, for bringing it all together, and to Finley as well. This has been a real privilege to be a part of this season. Look out for season two, where we're going to be looking for even more. We're going to be looking for even more change. And the time for words has ended. It's time for action. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. I hope you felt inspired.
Thank you, Gavin. Thank you.
Gavin, yes. I've felt really inspired. I hope everyone in the audience has. I think everyone that I've messaged after these episodes, every single guest has felt inspired. I just really hope that everyone that's been listening can sort of catch on and just sort of go, right, you know, we need to make positive change in me, in my teams, for my learners, and for everyone. So thank you, everyone, for joining us today. See you season two, 2022, and at the conference as well.